Welcome to TV I Say with Ashley Ray, your go-to podcast for discovering what to watch on TV and getting you closer to the TV shows you love. I'm Ashley Ray, a comedian, writer, and former TV critic, and each week my friends, fellow comedians, actors, writers will drop by to dive into the best TV shows we're all talking about right now. All right, let's get into it.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthyliving.
Hello, TV Club. I am really excited for today's conversation. It is going to be fun. I think we're gonna talk about a whole lot of TV because I have a TV legend in the studio today. And we are in the studio. We are here. Like, I want to shout that out because it feels fun.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful vibe. Gorgeous picture view.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I look much better in this picture than I do right now, IRL. but I am so happy to have you here, Stan Zimmerman. You've written on Golden Girls, Gilmore Girls, a lot with the girls. And now your new book, The Girls from Golden to Gilmore, is out.
Yes, I read the bottom of it.
Let me read the bottom. Stories about all the wonderful women I've worked with.
Turn it over.
And Roseanne.
There you go. Okay.
Roseanne is the other show. You brought it up and it's right there.
It's right there. My publishers were like, we can't say that. What would happen? What will she say? And I'm like, bring her on. I'm ready for a cage fight with Roseanne.
What is she going to say on like the show? What is she on now? Fox News?
She has a podcast, where she's interviewing people like Carrie Lake and, you know, lovely Americans.
Yeah, okay. You know, I think she can say what she wants. It's exactly. Okay. I'm so excited to have you here to hear about all these stories and to get your current takes on TV. It seems like we're still in this pivotal moment for television and what's happening. We just came out of the strikes and everyone was like, it's going to get better. But every day there's more news about shows getting canceled and what happened to the sitcom. And you were there for the whole golden era of it. So I want to talk about so much today.
There have been many golden eras.
That's the thing.
I also teach acting workshops and audition workshops. And I had an actor call me and text me like, I need to talk to you. Because there was that article, I think it was in Variety or Hollywood Reporter, one of those, that said, you know, they're making three pilots this year.
Yes, Hollywood Reporter. Three pilots, and they're all NBC and everything else. They're not shooting anything. Everyone's having a hard time.
Yes, and he was in a panic. Should I go to Plan B, give up acting? And he's such a good actor. And I said, I've lived through so many of these. You have to ride it out. And you also have to remember, anything that's in those trades, those are planted.
What they want you to know.
Exactly. And then they're also, I think, stoking a little fear because of the IATSE strike coming up.
Exactly.
So, you know, all the stories we think, it's not news really. They're kind of PR planted stories.
Yeah.
So, you know, take it with a grain of salt and be ready to ride the ride.
As that's good to hear, particularly as a comedian, as a stand-up who just released her debut album, Ice Cream Money. You can listen to it wherever you want.
And where's your TV show? Let's start pitching it.
So for stand-up comics, the way we usually got TV shows was with JFL, Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. If you don't know what it is, you're probably like most Americans because most people don't know what JFL is.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds like a Jewish organization I belong to.
Yeah. Most people are like, is that like a network? Is that what is it? And it's this huge Montreal comedy festival where stand-ups go, and it was where all of the industry went, and they would love your set, give you a deal right there, you'd make a pilot. So many people went through this, like Gerard Carmichael, Amy Schumer, Kevin Hart, so many people that you love And just last week, they announced they're going bankrupt.
What?
And the festival's not happening this year.
How is that possible? It was so big.
It's, well, that's what we all thought. And they said that after COVID and 2 years of doing it, you know, reduced, it impacted their income. They have to go bankrupt. They laid off 70 employees.
First Macy's, now this.
Yeah.
How are we to survive?
What are we? And I was just like, but it's JFL. And yeah. The funny thing is, all the comedians, we all had auditions this week. The week they announced it, my audition was tomorrow. They announced this yesterday. I get a text after it's in the paper that's like, hey, by the way, your audition is canceled. They're all canceled. They're not doing it. It's just not happening this year. And they hope to bring it back next year.
Someone needs to step up and create maybe a new one.
A new one.
Yes, because it's such a great avenue for people like me to see stand-up comics.
Yeah.
And there was a day, remember like back in Roseanne and Tim Allen, if you hit, you know, in the stand-up comedy market, you were suddenly given a network deal and developed your own show.
Everything.
Brett
People
Butler.
Wanted to hear the whole story, hear your voice. And now that pathway just seems closed to us. And someone was saying, I want to give this person credit because they're an amazing comedian. I think it was Jay Jordan was saying that the middle class level of like comedian and TV writer is dying, that they're trying to kill this off and make it harder to make that transition. How do you feel about that?
Well, I felt bad during the strike because I saw a lot of writers not being able to work, but also the discussion started to happen about not being able to make a living as a writer on a TV show because the orders for shows are so small.
Yeah.
You can't make a living on 6 episodes of a show. When I was starting out, there were 24 episodes. We were exhausted by the end of it.
What was it like?
Well, it's nice now because of residuals, but back then it was, you gave up your life to be on a TV show. And I think that's why my writing partner was like, all right, we've done this enough. How many jokes can you have, you know, people coming and going out of living rooms? But back then, but it was also a great training ground.
Yeah.
I think of Golden Girls as like writing 101. I never thought of myself as like a really funny writer. And that taught me like how to do jokes. Oh, wait, we have to go in and pitch 5 what we call blows to a scene, you know, the last joke of a scene. So to learn how to craft jokes. And I guess we learned because we kept getting jobs.
Yeah, that's kind of the evidence right there.
Yeah, but we also learned about story. And I think that's how you learn structure, because we had to come up with all those episodes week after week after week after week.
Yeah.
And so, you know, now I teach a little bit. During COVID, I did it a lot because we were all stuck in our houses and somebody said, can, you know, teach writing. We want to do something.
Absolutely.
And I always thought, well, how? I went to a few writing classes and it was always, you know, these older guys just like talking their heads off and I'd be like sleeping. I was like, I want, if I work with people, to come away with something.
Yeah.
So then I came up kind of patterning after the Groundlings, how you do it in sections. So I did from pitch to page. So I did pitching, was like a whole section for 3 weeks. And then at the end, you pitch to me and a professional person. Month off, you work on your outline, 3 weeks of outlining. A month off and you work on like the first 2 scenes. So at the end of it, you got to have at least act 1 done.
Yeah.
And then these writers kept saying, we want more. So I'm like, okay, well, let's do act 2. And then we did act 3. And then I made the mistake, I guess, of posting it on Instagram. And then people from all over the world were like, I want to take your class. And at one point during COVID, I was teaching 4 classes a week.
Oh my gosh.
And it was, and I get really involved, I mean, emotionally in each one of those.
Yeah.
But I end up losing, you know, my own self in that. But I felt it was really great to see other people at that time when we all were so kind of lost in what's happening to the world. And it was during the whole George Floyd thing as well. To have a place, a community where we can create and be our artists still.
I think the best way to do it is to talk to other writers, to hear their ideas, to bounce things off of each other. So that's really, really amazing.
It was very exciting. And then some people had these ideas since they were like, you know, 15 or 20 years old, and suddenly they were older and they got to actually complete a script. So that felt great.
Yeah. One way I learned to write TV was writing spec scripts for Golden Girls.
Oh my God.
The first spec script I ever wrote was for the Golden Girls. It was horrible.
Why?
What
was the story? Do you remember?
Oh my gosh. I wrote it when I was like 19. This was in college, my first writing class. I want to say...
What was it? Was it A story and B story? Did you know about those?
Kind of things? Yeah, yeah. It had A, B, and I think even a little C story.
Oh, look at you.
I was really... I was an over, you know, an overachiever.
How did you know to do an A and a B story?
I was obsessed with television. And so I, sophomore year at my school, you could kind of craft your own independent study. So I found this one professor on campus who was like, yeah, I love TV. What do you want to do? And I would work with her. She would assign certain shows. My focus was Black television. So she would like assign an episode of The Cosby Show. This was before everything.
Yeah.
But we would like sit together and just like write the beats out in a tutorial class where it was just like me, her, and two other students. And so she would be like, okay, let's write the beats out. Let's like see what story is this? Where does this go? Like, who is in this storyline? What is this about? What are we cutting? How do they cut away to this? Learning about blows and stuff like that. So that's how I knew how to piece it together. And she would have us do either Modern Family or The Golden Girls. Mm-hmm. Because she was like, these are the shows that have the most jokes in them. Mm-hmm. And you got to have a lot of jokes.
A lot of jokes. They would say like a joke per page.
Yeah.
And always a joke when you enter a room or exit a room.
Or exit a room, yeah.
Which is kind of tough because now I do that in real life and my friends find it annoying. Like, he's leaving with a joke. And I'm like, great. Bye. Get out of here. And a lot of pressure too. So when I started out, there were no...
Well, I mean, now this whole interview, I mean, what joke are you going to leave with?
Yeah. I got to start thinking of
it. Gosh.
But when I started, there were no classes. Now there's actually Golden Girl classes in colleges where they're studying it. But there were no sitcom writing classes. So I would sit in front of a TV and write down, watching a sitcom, okay, there's a little thing at the beginning and then there's a commercial and then there were three scenes commercial. And that's how I learned structure, by looking at it, you know, episode after episode and seeing what's similar in that.
Yeah.
And that's how I just taught myself.
Same. Yeah. Just watching a lot of TV and going, oh, okay, I understand. This person is always doing this and like building this kind of trope. And oh, that's like how you use Rose. And she can set up a joke and she's dumb, but you know, you expect her to say something dumb, but also she can be sharp and clever and biting sometimes.
Right.
I think I remember the biggest plot was about Dorothy dating a Black guy. It was very racial, this episode.
Great.
My spec script.
Yeah.
It was about Dorothy dating a Black guy, and she thinks that Sophia doesn't like him because he's Black. And she like is like, stop being racist, Ma. And she's like, it's not that he's Black. It's just that he acts a lot like Stan, your ex. And I see these signs. And Dorothy is just like, no, you're just being racist. You just think he's lazy and he doesn't work and he needs my money because he's Black. And she's like, no, really. And then it's revealed he really is like Stan. Like, it's eventually Stan.
That's
and
brilliant.
It's like revealed. And you see them like even doing the same gestures. And Dorothy bites her fist and is like, oh, I see it now, Ma. Yeah, so I do remember that was the main story.
And what was people responses to it?
My professor was just like, I don't know that it's realistic because it was so racial. She was just like, I don't think a network would, you know, go with something like this, but it feels like a modern take on the Golden Girls.
No, as you know, Golden Girls did some really interesting storylines all
and
throughout.
Sexual
harassment.
When Sophia goes out kind of with the Black guy, you know, they have like a little thing and he ends up like getting, he also, I think, has memory loss issues and ends up leaving with like his daughter.
Suicide they dealt with. But sexual harassment. We wrote the episode Adult Education when Blanche was harassed by her professor. So they really did. But we were told on the show, never write it like, I hate to say this, but a Facts of Life, very special episode.
A special episode.
They were like, do not think of it that way. Think of it as just real stories that these women would go through and integrate it in a realistic way, be super funny, but also be really honest. And I think that's why that show, you know, still,
I mean,
remains relevant today
because
those issues, unfortunately, like racism, are still, you know.
And it's almost shocking how the Golden Girls handled it a lot better than current shows do. I mean, it talked about homosexuality. It touched on those and people are like, oh, that came out in like the 80s.
But which you'll find in my book. I had to be in the closet while I was on staff on season one of the show.
Gosh.
And people like, they cannot believe that. But it was just a different time. But we were told by our representatives, if there was any function dealing with the show, bring a woman.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's like really like a beard in the closet.
A beard. That's what they called it back
then.
And Estelle Getty was the only one that knew. And that's how we became friends outside of the show, because she was an ally, you know, and she was in Torch Song Trilogy and surrounded herself with many gay men. You know, when she would invite me out to dinner, and I'd be, oh my, I'm having dinner with Estelle Getty. And I'd get there and it'd be a table of 20 gay guys, all actors from the shows or the tours of that. I'm like, well, at least I'm at the table.
Yeah.
So that was still exciting.
I would love to be at this table.
I know.
I would. This sounds like the best table you
Why
could be
Why weren't you there? Oh, you weren't even born yet.
I was not
yet.
Even a thought Fine. Anywhere. I was not All even right. yeah. a whisper in like my mom's head.
Well, some religions believe your life is already planned and plotted out.
So in some ways, maybe I was there.
Yeah,
maybe
you were. God had done an A story and a B story on you.
On me. There you go. I can't remember any other plots from that episode, but
I'm going to need to read this. I'm sorry.
I think I still have it. I still have my college hard drive. I do remember when I first moved to LA, I submitted it for a like writer's workshop thing. And they said I couldn't use it because the show was too old.
I disagree.
Same. But now they have all these rules that are like, oh, it has to be a show that aired in the last
two seasons. So when we were staffing shows back in the day, someone had sent us a spec, a Mary Tyler Moore show, which was off the air for probably 15 years. But that jumped to the top of our pile because we're like, that is such a smart, clever way, because there's so many spec scripts that I think something like this that deals with that issue and with Golden Girls, people would want to read it and look at that. And I think it's a great way to, you know, into, you know, what is something that affects you and that you want to talk about.
Yeah. It also is so hard now because shows get canceled after like one season. So I've also written spec scripts. And then a season later, they're like, oh, we can't take this because it's not, it got canceled. Sorry, no one knows what this is.
Yeah, there's that problem. And are you a fast writer? You paused, yeah.
Yeah. With specs, I'm fast. Okay. With that, it's like, oh, okay. With my own stuff, I go slower.
you're creating characters and figuring it out.
Yeah, I'm quick with an outline. I'm quick with the first draft. And then it's a lot of, okay, let me hammer at this and put the jokes in it.
And do you only write alone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which I don't know. I've never tried to write with someone. I don't know why.
I'm the opposite. I was always writing with someone. I never thought I could write alone. And then not till recently have I wrote a play and kind of finding my legs as, you know, somebody on their own. But directing is more of my love now, and either directing my own work or directing other people's plays.
Yeah.
Do you ever write theater?
I actually have just started like editing and collaborating on some theater stuff. And I loved it so much that I've started writing a play that I had originally thought of it as a short film. And now I'm kind of like, oh, I think I could see this on the stage.
Let's drag you into theater.
Kind of am there. I've been working with this playwright who I absolutely love. And I won't,
don't say too much.
I can't say too much, but they have just really opened up what I thought theater could do for me and what you could represent. Mm-hmm. They're working on creating something that combines like your typical horror film experience, the jump scare on the stage and within a theater. So it's just been really experimental and exciting. And I was like, I think I want to do more of this.
Okay. I'm going to encourage it.
Yeah. Thank you.
We need your voice out there.
Yeah.
So.
And
keep
you
going.
Know, I mean, there doesn't seem to be any writer's room, so it's something else to do. But that experience of writing with other people in a room is so special. What are some of the, best stories you have? From Golden Girls?
Oh, my God. All of them were very different. And there's, you know, a group of just the craziest people. You know, on Golden Girls, it was a very small room as compared to Roseanne. Well, on a regular show back in the day, you'd maybe have 10 writers at the most. So Roseanne had 21 writers.
Yeah.
Because Tom and Roseanne would bring in a lot of their stand-up comedy friends. Just to come in and punch up the shows. But then I would have to teach them how to write
and what the show is about. I believe this is what led to one of the most famous stories in TV history.
Who Jackie? I heard about that. I was not there then, but in my room, it was Norm Macdonald and Laura Keitlinger and Lois Bromfield, who was one of the filthiest stand-up comics ever. Every other word is, I can't even say it on here, or you'd be just banned. So they had never written before. So we would, because there were 21 writers, they'd split us up. And my writing partner, Jim Berg, and I would get that room of stand-up comics.
Wow.
And, you know, they'd be pitching jokes that were hysterical, but we had to tell them and teach them. They had to come from character, especially on a show like Roseanne. It wasn't just standalone jokes.
Yeah.
But
you have to know who Jackie.
You have to know who Jackie. And then, you know, something out of Jackie's mouth could not be put in Roseanne. They're very different characters. So I'm particularly proud when, you know, people like Pat Bullard and Laura went on to be, you know, big writers in the sitcom world. So they all kind of began in that room. It was very intimidating to be in a room, you know, then in the main room with 21 writers.
Yeah.
Because
how do you even just get heard?
How do you get heard? But also for me, I kind of clammed up a little bit because for Jim and I, we would craft a joke. We're not stand-up comics. And so stand-up comics, mostly, I feel like they can just like spit out joke. And we would have to kind of like, oh, what about this word? And then it would be formed. So in that big room, sometimes I would get quiet. And then in other rooms, I felt more comfortable and could talk. That was just an intense experience. And just dealing with, you know, all those different personalities. And then having Roseanne at the top of that, but that's a whole other thing.
Well, there I did watch the Dark Side of Comedy episode about Roseanne, where they talked a bit about what it was like to work under her and what the experience was running. You know, just it seemed chaotic a bit.
So our year, there were 21 writers, and there's a famous story of the numbered T-shirts. So Tom and Roseanne thought it'd be funny if they handed out in the first day on set a number of T-shirts. They made all the writers stand in line, and we each got a different number. And they thought that way they wouldn't have to learn our names, and they could just point and say, number 13, you're fired. My birthday's the 13th, so I kind of finagled my way in to get that T-shirt. I should have wore it today, but I still have it. The writers were furious. They're like, that's not fair. That's wrong. And I just wanted the 13. And then it wasn't until I got home and went, wait a minute. That's really cruel
That would be me. First, I'd be like, well, that's funny. Yeah, yeah. And then later I'd be like, oh, and I see the mean part now. Now I see the mean part.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthy living.
But I have to give credit to Tom Arnold. He was really the driving force for the year that I was there and keeping that show moving. Because it's a lot to produce a show and to keep her in check. And it was exciting to be there and to have just that, you know, community of writers. And there was so much talent in that room. And it was a lot of laughs. But it was also a lot of living in fear. You know, they told us never let Roseanne see the whites of your eyes because then she could point and fire you.
What?
So
oh, my God.
Yeah. So they said, find the tallest person on the set. You know, when we go down for run-throughs, stand behind them.
Okay.
So which we did.
Norm McDonald
was pretty
tall,
big. Yeah. So he'd be a good person. But it was fun to be around that. But it was also a very toxic environment when we were interviewing to get the job. So we turned down the job before the pilot was made, because they wanted us to sign like a 7-year deal, and we were kind of into developing our own projects. And at that point, Laurie Metcalf and John Goodman were not attached to the piece yet.
Yeah.
But then a few years later, we're like, I just love this show, and I've always loved her. And so then we wanted we kind of gave the push to get on the show, and we did get on it. But it was, you know, very different than Carsey Werner. The producers were not allowed on set.
Oh.
The network was not allowed to give notes. Yeah. Because when you
this
become
a
hit
great,
show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't have to.
Nothing. But I've been on a lot of shows in like the early years when they're just starting and everyone's in panic mode.
Yeah.
And they're trying to second guess what they think an audience would like.
At my first show, everyone was giving notes.
What show was that?
Alabama Jackson on Adult Swim. Yeah. And we were just like, this is like a weird comedy on adults. Mm. Who cares? And they were just like, no, everyone review.
Picking,
what do you think? Yeah. And just, I was shocked.
Yeah. I just think like, and it's happening more with streaming shows, like hire the writers, let them hire the staff.
Yeah.
And let them
write.
Write and do their vision. And it's either going to work or not work. But sitting there giving notes of like, why do you have to have that character have that name? Like, no, someone's going to turn off the show because of a name. It should be, you know, and when you look at like Amy Sherman Palladino, who we met on Roseanne, and she later brought us on to Gilmore Girls, you know, she's been able to have her vision of whatever that is with Gilmore Girls or even Mrs. Maisel, and she has a new show she's working on.
I think I'd heard about this. Was it announced?
It was announced. They're filming it now in Paris.
Ooh.
I think it's about two ballet companies.
Already
you're there.
Bunheads.
Yes.
I mean,
I worked on the pilot of Bunheads. Yeah.
Ooh.
So I was helping.
Justice for Bunheads.
You want to bring it back?
Yeah, everybody wants it. Do you know how intense there's
the love for
yeah,
Bunheads,
the bun, yeah. the love for it.
Yeah.
The people who are like, what do you mean you didn't watch this show that
Yeah. So I helped her. I went to all the casting, you know, when they were trying to find the mother. It ended up being Kelly Bishop.
Yeah.
But it was shot with another actress because I think Amy and the network felt like we can't do, you know, the whole Gilmore Girls thing again with, you know, Emily Gilmore and have Kelly be her mother again, be a mother. So they looked everywhere and there were some really great actresses that came in.
Come on.
But then it was like, Kelly Bishop, and she was a dancer. So what are we doing here? And Kelly has a book coming out, actually, too. Yeah, we've been fighting it out on the bestseller list. No. I mean, she is a friggin' legend.
I mean, I want to hear about the Gilmore Girls experience.
Oh.
I was late to that show.
Okay.
I didn't really watch it when it was on the air. I don't know why. I think I just like was just
what
a little too young. I had friends who were obsessed with it. I don't know. I was really into Grey's Anatomy, and that was my obsession. So anything else, I just kind of was like, I don't know.
There's nothing else in the world except Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, Grey's Anatomy was my...
Why? What about that show?
I don't know. I mean, the first season was amazing soundtrack. It was sexy and funny and dark, and it made you cry. But it was also like a dark, twisty woman who had issues. Mm. But everyone liked her anyway because she was so talented. Mm. And I loved all of that. Mm. I still watch Grey's Anatomy
and
now.
No half hours in that period?
I also was doing all the comedies.
Okay.
You know, I did all like the Thursday nights on NBC with like The Office, Parks and Recreation, 30 Rock was one of my favorites. Yeah.
Did you ever do a 30 Rock spec?
No, I didn't.
That would have been a good one for you.
I think I could. I've just always been intimidated by it.
Why? Because there was just a lot going on?
There's a lot going on. Yeah. I did a Modern Family spec, which, you know, because they're always like, it's such a big ensemble. Like, if you can handle that and, like, get everyone in the show in an episode, like, that's a good...
It's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. It's
it was
a
great pilot.
Exercise.
So Chris Lloyd, who co-wrote that, he was a... not even a staff writer on Golden Girls. He sat in our office, they gave him an episode or two, and he would just sit and watch me and Jim, kind of like a TV show, as we were panicking and learning. But he was, as a favor, his father was a famous TV writer.
Oh.
So he just sat there and watched
and
us
absorb.
Again. Absorb.
I mean, that's most
and I think
of
it worked
is,
out okay for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, you sit in rooms
and
you
watch
kind of
people.
Just pick it all up.
Yeah, and you learn what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah.
So I really learned, I didn't love all the years of living in fear of going to work. And I really wanted, when we finally were able to create our own shows, we did a show called Rita Rocks on Lifetime. We got 40 episodes, which today would have been a colossal hit.
Today,
40 episodes.
Today people would be like, 40? Oh my goodness. This is one of the longest running shows.
Give them a star on Hollywood Boulevard.
That's four whole seasons, maybe
would
even
be.
Five.
Yeah. We did it in two And we kept telling Lifetime, you have gold here. First of all, you had Nicole Sullivan from Mad TV, who is friggin' brilliant. And then she was playing opposite Tisha Campbell Martin, which I bow down to her.
Yeah.
And she was singing every other week. It was about a, they started a garage band. So to hear Tisha sing again.
Everything about this sounds amazing. Yeah. I bet there's nowhere to watch this.
No, there is.
Is there?
You can find definitely season one.
Okay.
So that's 20 episodes.
That's enough.
That's enough.
Weekend of TV.
There you go.
Okay, so, that's, come on.
Okay, now that's, you start binging that.
Yeah.
We were very proud of that. So we wrote that on spec because we loved American Idol and we love Roseanne. So we kind of combined those ideas of a mom and a garage band and singing. And I got to go into a recording studio and pick songs and we got to cover them. And it was just me and Tisha going, well, how do you want to do it? Well, I'll take this line and give Nicole that and I'll do this and I'll do la, 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 you know, whatever. I can't sing. And I would just be like, okay, you know, whatever you want to do, because it all sounded so brilliant. And she's such a talented person.
Yeah.
I think that's why she's been in so many successful sitcoms.
Like, she's such a good sitcom actress. She's just so funny and she knows how to hit jokes.
And she rises
it's
above the
skill.
Politics of it all.
Yeah.
She never got involved in whatever... Mishigas, it's a Yiddish word, you know, of all the nitpicking or fighting or bullshit.
Yeah.
She just was like, I'm here, I'm happy, I love working this.
The jokes, the work.
Yeah, and then she, boop, and then she'd go home. I would love to do anything with her, and I'm just very excited to see, you know, everything she's gotten back into singing.
Yeah, has a show coming out too or something. Or
she always has a show.
Yeah, she always has a show.
Yeah, so.
I mean, every pilot season, except maybe this one, because there's only three shows.
Yeah, so when we were auditioning for that, it was a part of the Rita's male lady who sees her in her garage and I sing in the church and they start the band. So we took three actresses with us to the network. So that's what you do. You audition a bazillion people and then you bring your top three or four and then we all discuss who we think has the best chemistry. It was Tisha Campbell Martin, Jasmine Guy, and friggin' Octavia Spencer before The Help.
Yeah.
Like, any one of them would have been like brilliant.
Any one of them would have been it would have blown up.
Yeah, and we're like, okay.
Oh my gosh. I think this probably was Jasmine Guy in Dead Like Me around that time.
No, it was before that. She hadn't done anything for a long time, so people were like, that's a really interesting idea. And Octavia wasn't really a singer, and Tisha and Nicole just had this chemistry. But even before we got to Nicole, we had gotten it to Cyndi Lauper, who wanted to do it. Like, think of that would have been Cyndi and...
That would have been fun.
And Lifetime's like, well, she's going off to do her, she just put out an album and she was going on tour and they didn't want to wait for her.
Yeah.
I'm like, you don't want to wait for Cyndi Lauper?
Do you not want to hit Lifetime? Do you want it golds?
So we're like, okay.
Well, they don't know what they're doing over there.
Don't get me started with that.
To this day.
I've done many, 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 many half hour sitcoms, pilots there. And I think they had an avenue of, where they could have...
They really could have kept making...
Open the door for female-driven...
For female-driven sitcoms and shows, and they kind of tried it with, like, Hot in Cleveland, but even that, I think, was TV Land?
Yeah, it was TV Land. TV it wasn't Land. Even Lifetime.
Oh, they ran the reruns.
Right, but it could have been...
It could have been on Lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would have done, open the whole night.
Yeah.
We even developed with Sue Rose and, you know, Ninochka Khan?
Yeah, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so in the beginning, before she'd ever done any sitcoms... They had us supervise her in her first pilot. It was an animated female show called 4WD, which is four women driving. And it was about four women in a carpool. They did some research and they came back, well, women don't like animated shows. And we're like, wait, stop, come on.
Yeah.
They wrote the pilot and then we wrote the second episode. I still think it's friggin' brilliant, funny, should be on the air. But don't tell me women don't like.
That's always
that's the reason.
Like working in animation, people are always like, oh, well, girls don't really like it. Women don't like it. It's really male dominated. Men aren't going to understand that. And I'm just like, no, I watch every animated show.
Yeah. Or try it. And just, then if it doesn't work, okay. But I mean, give some people something new.
Yeah. It's, but it can't just be one show like Tuca and Birdie every 25 years or something.
Yeah. And then we developed one called Sex and Execs. And it was about 2.5 hours, but from different points of view, very Rashomon. And 1.5 hour was four executives.
Ooh.
And their assistants were the minor characters. And then the second 1/2 hour was the same timeline, but seen from a different point of view of the assistants.
Yeah.
So each one thought they ran the company. And it was really clever and unusual.
That sounds really fun.
I don't know if people will get it.
Yeah. Oh, it's really high concept.
Yeah. Yes. So there's all that bullshit that, you know, that's what's exhausting.
It's so hard to get a good show made. And now even harder. But there are some that are
out. Sneak through. Yes.
Yeah. So that's part of the podcast, what we love to ask every guest. What are you watching
right
now?
What am I watching?
Do you see that wonderful pivot there?
I knew that's where you were going with it. Yeah. I love a good transition. Well, I'm kind of hooked to MSNBC. I know that's not a sitcom, although some episodes are. Yes.
Okay, actually, yeah. So they have this new show that's like called American Scandal, or like My Country of Scandal.
Really?
And each episode
on the weekend?
And each episode looks at like a politician and like their downfall. Right. So they did an episode on like John Edwards and when he cheated on his wife with cancer. And a lot of that stuff I was young, so I was just like, oh, this is kind of cool. So I've been watching some MSNBC.
Okay.
I have it on
at all times because I just feel like the world could end at any minute. I just want to be prepared or just like, give me a heads up. But besides that, I'm really enjoying The Gilded Age on HBO Max.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine that I started theater with in college at NYU, Michael Engler, is the director and producer of the show. And I know so many of the actors because they're all these Broadway people. I mean, it's just crazy. And I love looking at that time period. It's just really interesting storylines and Audrey
I've
McDonald's
been obsessed with it. I also loved Downton Abbey, and it's very that vibe for me.
What's the same writer created it? I never watched Downton Abbey. I did watch the movie because my friend Michael directed the second one, I think.
Yeah. It's one of those shows where I was obsessed with it and I loved it and it made me feel good while I was watching, but I also did not particularly care about what was happening. Okay. I just kind of like, I like the vibe. I'm here for whatever happens. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I am with Gilded Age, is that I'm like, it's beautiful. I love this. So lush. Let's go.
So gorgeous. And the costumes and just the acting and just all the stuff that they're dealing with, like that woman that built the bridge because her husband, you know, that just fascinating stories.
Yeah.
I feel so. I'm really liking that. How do you feel about the Sex and the City sequel?
I'm obsessed with it, and I've watched every second of it.
Me too.
I don't know that I'd say good is a relative term. Is it a show that I never want to miss an episode? I will watch as long as they make it. Yeah. I will watch
it. Me too.
Do I always understand the choices made? No, but that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
That's part of the entertainment of it.
Yeah. Sometimes you scream it and go, what? And other times you go, that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that one thing and you're like, oh, that is a really wonderful way of handling that.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. And other times you're just like, what do you mean? Like, what?
Shay did what?
Like, what? Why is Miranda living in a closet or something?
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah.
You have too much respect to do that.
Yeah. What do you think about it?
Well, I met Michael Patrick King years ago during their last season, and I got to go back and walk through Carrie's shoe closet. So that was very exciting. And I kept begging, keep the show going, but they were kind of done with it at that point. So then I, you know, watched the first movie. I went to that, which I liked. The second movie, I'm going, what?
Not so great.
Okay. and then like you, I was obsessed when it came back, and there's something about it. Those characters,
I love seeing them.
Yeah. Some of it was, you know, like, oh, you're just doing that to make it more diverse.
Yeah.
But then you've kind of like fall in love with those people. And then I think the second year kind of felt a little more.
It kind of gelled more. And at the same time, I felt like there were a lot of people where I was like, do we really need this person?
People,
do we need
all?
There's so many people.
Yeah.
Can we just focus on the girls? Do I really need to care about like Carrie's co-host on her podcast marriage to some designer lady?
Yeah.
I need this? No.
No, you're done with that storyline?
I don't need that. I don't need to hear about, oh no, her ex-co-host podcast is unsure if he wants to get married. Mm-hmm. Oh, but don't worry, he does. Yeah. Didn't care. Yeah. Didn't care.
And where do you stand on the Shay?
I'm a Shay defender.
Yeah.
I think that Che is everything that defines this new era of it just being messy, unclear, but just entertaining and trying so hard. Oh, that's what Che gave us at the end of the day. Was it good all the time? No. I thought they could have left Che in season one and we could have moved on. And it probably would have been a lot stronger because it just started to turn into one of those things like where Che was doing a lot of just internal finding themselves, like watching old stand-up clips. Mm. And I was like, I don't care. I was just like, what does this have to do with the girls?
Miranda,
like, well, yeah, let's get back to like, okay.
Well, how'd you feel about the whole sitcom storyline? And Tony Danza. Okay. That says it all, folks.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was hilarious that I guess Che would not get their partner like a seat in their trailer or something.
Yeah,
that they wouldn't like have them with them.
Yeah.
That was a little silly. And just Che yelling, "You ruined the family scene."
Yeah.
So silly.
And it's also hard to do stand-up on TV because it always feels kind of fakey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. It always feels flat.
Yeah.
It's weird. And then just Abby being like, that was the best we're going to get because Che sucks and can't act and Che's the worst.
But seeing just the response online, it was intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of team Che in that one. Yeah. I was like, why would you have your phone on? And she tried to like have some excuse of like, I'm old and confused by phones. My son has to turn the ringer on. And I was just like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting next season to see where it all goes.
Yeah. And apparently there will be no Che.
No. Nope.
That's what they're saying.
No, that's definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
That's definitely not happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless
they
went to England and they're, you know, with Samantha doing something.
I really want them to bring Samantha back.
I just don't think that's going to happen. Like, what is the real
Samantha
beef there?
Samantha came back in that weird CGI
voiceover moment.
Where you could absolutely tell they were not talking to each other in any way.
Don't you think, like, who's like a modern day Dr. Phil that could bring them back together?
Someone has to figure it out. The show feels off without Samantha.
Yeah, it does.
They keep trying to fill in the Samantha hole with like these random people.
The Samantha hole. That's
part of me is just like, I don't even care if you just jump to England sometimes. No reason why. I don't care. You just show us what Samantha's doing.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthyliving.
Did you watch The L Word? Is that what we've been
I
on
did.
That? Yeah.
Did you watch the reboot?
I could not. The original to me was kind of like watching Showgirls every week. it was talk about crazy choices. And I just loved watching it and they had some great people on it. But then they would come up with things like someone's job was they were like a trapeze artist. And I thought, so everyone's in the room pitching. Pitch a show. What is their job? Job. You pitch a job.
Trapeze artist.
Done. All right. Put it in. Like,
put it in.
Like, that was like, oh, wow.
Okay. The L Word, I did watch when it aired.
Yes.
I
loved it.
12, and I was obsessed
12?
With it. I think 12 when The L Word.
This explains so much.
Right. It was very much one of those. I was always very queer and knew what my story was. And I would stay up and sneak watch it so my mom wouldn't know. And even as a kid, I was like, this is not real adulthood.
Yeah.
I was like, this doesn't seem real. And by the time it gets to Helena, like doing fraud or something in Jenny's weird movie, it was off the rails. And I loved it at that point.
Yes. More off the rails to me.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just further in love with it.
Every flashback Jenny has while writing Thus Spoke Jenny Schuster, or every single one was like, okay, I'm in. Sure. Why not?
And then there's Alan Cumming. And you're like, come on, bring him on. Yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
They just truly would be like, oh, some old queer actor wants to be on the show. Throw him in.
Yeah.
They can have an arc where they date Shane for two episodes.
Well, who didn't? I feel like I was the only one that hadn't. Queer as Folk, did you watch that?
I did do Queer as Folk, and I also watched that reboot.
Oh, okay.
Did you?
No. The original, I watched the British version, then I watched the American one. I really wanted to get on staff for that, and then we met.
I loved the American version.
It was good, yeah. I remember Peter Page, is that his name? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to go to the same gym, and I remember when he got the part, and he just came running, oh, I got the part on the show, and I was like, oh, I watched it in England and, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And so I was very happy for him.
That's how I fell in love with Brian Kinney.
Oh, Brian Kinney.
The guy who played him.
Gail Harold.
Yes, Gail Harold.
I knew I'd get it.
Yes Gail Harold. I'm like, he's so dreamy.
Yeah,
he was one of my first teen guy crushes where I was like, oh my goodness, I get it. Yeah.
I mean, they showed a lot on that show.
Oh, they showed a lot, and I was into it. I was just like, I remember a friend being like, isn't it weird you watch like this gay guy show? And I was like, if I like boys, what's wrong with seeing two boys?
Right. Well, that's like a thing, isn't it? Like in Japan or something, but here it's not here. Why
not
is that?
Here.
Our culture is just too, no.
We're backwards in a lot of ways.
I know, we got to change that.
Yeah. But you didn't watch that reboot on Peacock.
No. I don't know. Some of these reboots, you know, I watched like Saved by the Bell, maybe two episodes because I know Josie and I wanted to support that show.
That one was funny and I like that they took it in a different direction. Some of the Queer as Folk, they also took it in a different direction where it was like entirely new characters, not really connected to the original. Mm. It was set in New Orleans. And then they like take the same story but tried to update it. So like how Brian Kinney is way older than the guy Randy or whatever that he's into, and it's like a little like
he's cute.
Yeah. But you can't do that today. No, today Tilda's like that's
the original
age gap
wasn't
issue. He's in high school. He's And so in this one, they still kept that but tried to make it different so that it would be okay. They were like, oh, they aren't into each other. He just likes the mentorship. But he is a senior in high school, but he is 18. And it was like, come on.
Why not just make him a college student?
Yeah. If you're going to
do it,
just do it. Do it and make him a college. Yeah. And fine. And then people can be like, oh, it's kind of weird because he's 22 and the other guy's 30 something. But it's like, okay, that's at least realistic or not going to cause a. Well, it'll still make people angry on Twitter because everyone's angry on Twitter. But, you know, it's just do that.
Now, what about your own sitcom? Have you thought about that?
Oh, yeah. I have so
many. Do you
have
a script?
I have so many pilots. Yeah.
That you've written?
That I've written.
That you would be the star of?
That I would be the star of. One of them.
Based on your own life?
Yeah, they're based on my life. One is called Dating the Zodiac. I dated every Zodiac sign a month at a time for a year.
Wait, stop. On purpose?
On purpose.
Okay. What made you think of that?
I was 26 and I was bored.
Okay.
And, I was talking to a friend and I was just like, maybe I just haven't been dating the right sign. I'd been dating a lot of Geminis and just unlucky in love. And I was like, maybe I just got to get out there. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make myself do this experiment. I'm going to date every sign. I had strict rules. Like they had to be that sign. I dated them a month before their birthday. So when Venus was in their sun sign. So when Venus was in Pisces, that's when I would date Pisces, which was usually in 2016, like a month before. And I had strict rules of like when the month ended, it was over. Like we couldn't go out again. But at the end of the experiment, if we wanted to, we could. And I was upfront about all of this.
It's actually a brilliant idea of a show. And you could take, would you do like 4 weeks of episodes?
Yeah, that's how I saw it. And then I originally, 12 episodes originally and one for each sign.
Okay. But you could do 4 episodes for the month.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and do it like
and
that.
And do each one. And
yeah.
Some of them I only dated like one person that whole month. Some of them I dated a lot more people than that.
Oh,
in a month.
Okay. So but, you're a little Blanche there, right?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Of course.
Yeah.
Which, can I tell you a fact?
Okay.
Which this totally has nothing to do, but can I? So why am I forgetting? Betty White died.
Betty White, yes.
When Betty White passed away, I was rewatching Golden Girls and I started counting because at the same time I had been rewatching Sex and the City. And I realized that that Rose on the Golden Girls goes on more dates and has most likely more sex.
Yes, that's been documented.
Blanche, but also then Carrie on Sex and the City and all the Sex and the City girls. Samantha comes close to meeting Blanche. But
you
it's
counted.
Still, I counted.
Oh,
I truly
gosh.
Was like, any date.
Are you in therapy? Yes. Okay, how many days a week?
I do have a therapist who's like, it's odd how into spreadsheets you are. And okay. I was like, it's not like it was hard.
Wow.
I was watching it anyway. You just kind of make a check like, okay. Oh,
ding,
that counts as a date.
Ding,
yeah. Like, oh, this is the episode where, you know, she dates this guy. And yeah, you're just like,
yeah,
okay. And I counted it up and I was like, yeah.
She's a big hoe.
The Golden Girls were bigger hoes than the Sex and the City ladies.
I can see that. Yeah. I remember. Yeah. So every the end of the year, I do like a little journaling. So journal. And in my book, I've been journaling since college. So I journaled during all those TV shows, like a lot. So I took the excerpts from each show and then I kind of compare how I felt back then about Betty White to like now as a more mature person, slightly, you know, where I was at. But I was journaling of my year and looking at like all the movie and TV shows I liked. And then all of a sudden my phone just started buzzing, buzzing, buzzing. And I'm like, all right, I looked at it and it was like Betty White passed.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, people started saying, oh, would you go on CNN in 20 minutes and talk about it? So my New Year's Eve changed a bit. But my attitude was, because there was so much sadness that day, remember?
Yeah.
Everybody felt, oh, she was so close to 100. Why couldn't she just hold out? We thought she would live forever. And my attitude was that I feel like she almost picked that day because we were all going to be holding a glass and a drink
and cheer to her
and all the laughs she brought us over all these years.
I mean,
don't be
I spent
sad.
That whole holiday season rewatching the show, aww, laughing, enjoying it, and it just felt like an inevitable send off. Like it was, would it have been nice to watch a I don't know NBC special about her 100th birthday? But I also love
they
it
made
was,
it anyway.
They did make it anyway, and I kind of liked that it was. It felt like her way of being like, I'm going out on my terms also.
When I want.
And
tonight.
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care about the ratings and your TV schedule. I gave enough to that. This is, my moment.
She gave a lot.
So,
so many years. And I mean, the whole push, remember, to get her on SNL as a host. How cool is that to have that in your lifespan of...
In her 80s, she did
that,
I
think.
She
was older.
It was incredible. But I had to share that statistic.
Oh, I love that.
But that's the show. I date all these signs for a year. And at the end of it, I slowly go crazy and end up in intensive outpatient therapy. So,
have you thought of making it into a book? Because you could do that as each chapter. Come on.
That's literally why.
Why are you sitting here?
Every day, my agent is like, so where's the draft? Where's the draft? And I'm like, oh, God.
How far are you into it?
I have about 3 chapters,
which,
it's an outline.
How many
outline.
Zodiac signs are there?
There's 12.
Well, you got some work to do.
I got some writing to do.
Get some espresso. Go home today.
And I did a major shift on the outline. When I started it, I was like 26. And the book is also really about my life and blah. And I don't know, before 30, I was like, how do you have anything to say for a book? I was like, I gotta live some
a little
life.
Bit, okay. You mean have more sex?
Yes, have more sex. It's just
don't
date.
Tell me that I have a life.
Live a lot of
we
life.
We know what you're talking
okay,
about.
Okay, I gotta
here, okay?
just experience the world.
Are you on all
know.
Those apps?
Oh, I was
and
on every dating app. When I really? Did this, I downloaded every single dating app.
And what was your favorite?
My favorite back then was definitely, I mean, Tinder was good when it first started, in that was like that period, 2016. And then I really loved OkCupid. When people actually used it, it was great because people would answer all the questions. I knew people had friends who were like, yeah, I spent like 40 minutes answering like 300 questions so I can meet the love of my life.
No, I'm not doing that. I did do it, but I'm not doing it anymore.
And now it's people are like, what do you mean? You just put a picture up, you swipe. What do you mean answer questions? But I would like do that and people were so okay on there with doing weird stuff that they were like, so you're doing an experiment? What is this? Uh-huh. Like, okay, sure, I'd do this.
And are you still on Tinder? Or you have somebody?
No, I'm polyamorous. So I tend to have dating apps, but I have been seeing someone where I'm not really seeing other
looking
people. But I do use Field, which is the dating app for poly people.
Okay.
So, but
I think it's sometimes fine just to swipe see people. Like, what's out there? And then when it matches, I get so... And sometimes I try to guess, like, as I'm swiping right, like, yeah, this person, come on. Like, I could urge them on. Yeah, like it's all done.
I feel it. And yeah. You're like, okay. Like, I love the immediate just ego. Yeah.
Until they don't respond to you. Yeah, and then it's like, really?
You and then swiped. I'm just always like, well, you know, people don't even check these things anyway.
Otherwise, they would still be in love with me.
Yeah. And then I have a pilot about my mom. Oh. She came out of the closet when she was 63. And at that point, she was still taking care of my grandma, who was like in her 80s at this, like 89, maybe even 91. But she was living with my grandma and taking care of her.
And did she tell her mother?
Yeah, my mom came fully out. Like, not just hey, grandma's gonna die soon anyway. Yeah. We don't need to tell her. Like, fully came out.
Did you have any inkling?
No. I was shocked when she told me. And then it's like, as I thought more about my childhood, I was like, oh, the signs were there. She was always so into Tracy Chapman.
Okay. You have no gaydar then, right?
It couldn't possibly be my mom. I was so blind to what my mom did that, like, growing up as a teenager, I smoked pot and I thought, my mom has no idea I smoke weed. My mom has no idea what weed is. And then when I went to college, I came home one weekend and my mom, like, was smoking pot. And I was shocked, and she was like, Ashley, I've been smoking pot since you were like a kid. Like, and I was just like,
what?
And then it just like hit me, and I was like, that's why you were always burning incense. I was just like, oh my God, wait, what?
Yeah.
And so with
and
her,
all those Fritos we were eating.
Yeah. And yeah, so I was always just like, no, like, that's not my mom. Yeah. She's a mom. Yes.
What'd your grandmother say?
She kicked her out of the house. She kicked her out. Oh. So the pilot, and really,
she moved
it
in
was,
with you.
In the pilot, she moves in with me. In reality, we were all like, grandma, who else is going to take care of you? So it was a short little fight. But in the pilot, she moves in with me. And my grandma is also older, so it's more of an arc. But
that could also be a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be a really good movie.
Yeah. And it's, you know, all about her at this older age kind of entering the queer community. And one that, like, is just not of her generation. And then at the same time,
learning how to
meet people and start all over. And so, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And where is she now? What is she doing?
She is still in Texas, which also, when she told me, she also was like, by the way, also, this is my girlfriend. And
oh, she had a girlfriend.
She had someone she was dating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I was like, wow, you found the one other 60 something year old lesbian in Dallas, Texas. I love that. Yeah. I'm so single, but I love that she pulled
thanks,
that
Mom.
Off. Yeah. Yeah.
And do they have a child or friend?
Right. Do they know anybody? Anybody? Yeah.
Yeah.
But she, was like just out and happy and, you know, has joined a few little Dallas liberal groups that exist.
I was in Dallas last year, world premiering a play called Silver Foxes, which we tried to sell as a TV series, which was kind of a gay men's Golden Girls. And we did a very famous table read in my living room with the late Leslie Jordan.
Oh.
George Takei, Bruce Vilanch, Sherry O'Terry, Daniel Gaither, Melissa Peterman, Todd Sherry, just a few people.
How am I not? I would give you $1 million right now to make it if I had. I'd say, here's all the money in the world.
So
make this show.
Logo developed it, hired us to write it, and then they said, we don't have the money to make the show. So then we wanted to go out to all the networks.
Very Logo.
No network would even open the script to read it because it was gay people. And old people.
Yep. And that was sort of the fear with this pilot is that I'm like, it's mostly about
old
my
people.
Gay old mom.
They're like, no.
And they're like,
isn't that awful?
Yeah. The one version, someone was like, maybe you should focus more on like the you part of it and like the younger part of it. And I was just like, she was like, you could have like a OnlyFans or something and you have to like take care of your mom. And I was just like,
No, that's not the story.
It's like, that's not the thing. But
yeah. And we would yell, what about Golden Girls? And they were like, no. Even streaming companies.
Yeah.
Said to us, well, it doesn't have broad enough appeal. And we know what that was code for. So,
and then you look at a show like Grace and Frankie.
Right.
And it's like, so what are we talking about here?
So we turned it into a play and we world premiered it at Uptown Players in Dallas.
Yeah.
And my friend Michael Urie from Ugly Betty and Shrinking directed it. And he did a brilliant job, and we had an amazing time and sold out. And now it's my fourth published play, and it's starting to be done around the community, around the United States. I'm going to Columbus to see the Midwest premiere September 6th. And hopefully one day it will be a series.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
I need to see this, and I would absolutely watch it. Oh my, we've been,
I know, like five I'm like hours, literally like, get out of here, Stan.
I think it's,
it's like 4:30 in the morning.
Oh my God, we're at the hour. Okay.
All right, get out.
Okay. Is there any other TV shows that you wanted to, like, shout out or that you're watching?
No, I want to watch your show and my show on TV. So let's start our own network.
Let's make that happen. Yeah, let's just start a network. We'll eventually get bought by Warner Brothers anyway.
Okay. Can it be SiriusXM, the network?
Yeah, sure. Why not? They probably have one.
Okay, well, let's get it together. You know,
they have everything. They're always like, yeah, we do the TV, radio, podcast, 80 different things.
So. I wanted to be a TV executive growing up. As a child, that was my dream.
Yeah, that kind of was what I saw as realistic when I was in college and graduating. I never could actually see myself like in a writer's room because I was like, that's so impossible. That's just a crazy dream. But I was like, oh, I could get an advertising job and I could be an exec and like work on the network
side. Yes, you'd have been a good executive.
I would have. And Jamie Tarsi's, who...
Oh, I worked with Jamie a lot.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Went to my college and she was my mentor senior year.
Wow.
And was so just... amazing and taught me so much. I knew her back in
the day, and then we ended up shortly before her death, we were pitching something.
Yeah. She was so amazing. And I was like, I could do that. I could be on the bad side, but be a good person.
I like
that.
The good witch. Yes.
And just be like, I'm fighting for these weird, funny shows.
We needed you. Yeah. I tried to get a job with Bob Greenblatt when he went over to NBC. And I was like, you should have a writer be in charge of comedy.
Yeah.
And he just didn't take me seriously. No. Like, no, that, you know too much.
They're like, that would be the worst thing in the world. Yeah. A writer, please. Someone emotional, no.
Yeah.
I need someone who knows what KPIs mean. This has been so fun.
So fun. Great meeting you.
Yeah, thank you so much. If you ever want to come back and talk TV, please come back.
I live up the street, so I'm just going to be loitering around your offices.
It's great here. They have coffee and it's wonderful.
Very good espresso, which is why I'm talking so fast.
Is there anything you want to encourage people to watch?
I encourage them to buy my book and
make sure you pick up The Girls from Golden to Gilmore, Stories About All the Wonderful Women I've Worked With. And Roseanne.
I love that you took that beat. You know comedy.
Oh, yeah. You know, I got a little timing. I got a little bit.
Very good.
You know, I'm going to tell you some things to watch for the watch list this week, your little homework. You're going to want to check out season 2 of Extraordinary on Hulu. This was one of my favorite watches last year. Nobody watched it because it's on Hulu, I guess. But it's about this world where everyone at the age of like 17 gets powers. And there's one girl who doesn't get her powers. She never gets them. And she finds a group of people who also don't. It's really funny. You're going to love it. And if you didn't watch season 1, go do that. I'm also going to recommend some documentaries that were weird that I watched. Just some. First of all, Seeking Sister Wife is back. You know how it's still a show I don't always understand, and it's just gotten crazier. Yes, there is a guy with 4 husbands, and yes, he has a 12-foot bed, and we will discuss that.
Does he want a fifth?
He does.
Okay.
And he absolutely does. But the fourth wife doesn't want a fifth wife, but wives 1 through 3 do want a fifth wife. So it's just causing a lot of tension. It's also, you're going to want to watch the program on Netflix. It just came out. It is about this weird cult that people thought was a institution for bad kids. So people who are like, my kid has drug issues, they're breaking the law, they're stealing, can you kidnap them in the middle of the night and send them to this reform school? And then it was a cult, actually. Fully a cult, like a weird cult. And everybody was like, well, it makes this guy rich, so we're not gonna ask a lot of questions. And then they just would hire not real teachers who were like,
isn't there some abuse or something?
Oh yeah, a lot of abuse and cult stuff. And then one of those situations where you're like, oh, I'm going to be frustrated at the end because no justice. Okay. great. But, you know, watch this and hear about it. It does a really good job of centering the victims and their narrative and they're a part of it. So, you know, I prefer those kind of documentaries.
Did you watch Cheer?
Oh, yes.
And what about all the things with her son?
Season 2 of Cheer. And like,
I was obsessed with it.
I want another season that looks like even into crazier. More of like how so many of those people have.
Why?
Just like, I don't know. it's so dark, and I love how they approach the darkness in season two. So I, but I doubt they're gonna keep making it. So.
They'll reboot it soon.
Yeah. You know, different school. They'll just be like, none of that ever happened. Yeah. We're looking at a different cheer team now, then, different part of the country.
Then they're all in jail.
Yeah. this has been so, so fun. Stan Zimmerman,
I'm
thank
getting
you
out of here, I swear.
For joining me. That's it. That's your homework. That's all you got to watch. Join me next week. We'll be back for another episode.
TV, I say, with Ashley Ray. Another episode, another episode.
TV, I say, with Ashley Ray is an Earwolf production made by me, Ashley Ray Harris. It's engineered by Abby Aguilar, produced by Anita Flores, executive produced by Amelia Chapelow, and our original theme song is by Rafia. It means so much to me if you go rate, review, subscribe, follow TV, I say. Let us know what you think and tell your friends. Share with your golden girls, tell your boys. If you love my TV recommendations, let everyone you know know. For special TV Club members, join my Patreon.
There's a moment you realize you're ready for what's next in your career. Maybe it's when you're trying a new scone recipe and think, I could open a cafe. Or maybe you're helping a coworker and say, I could teach a course on this. Whatever your moment is, it's never too early to plan for a career that lives longer. That's why, the younger you are, the more you need AARP. For skills training, resume tips, and job listings, visit aarp.org/work.
Tito's handmade vodka had been mixed with its fair share of cocktails. But one night, a chilled glass topped with lime and cranberry would change everything this bottle knew about happy hour. From the producers of America's favorite vodka, it turns out the cocktail you've been waiting for was right there the whole time. The Tito's Rum Cosmo. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll sip with Tito's. Coming to cocktail parties near you at Tito'sVodka.com. 40% alcohol by volume, namely 80 proof, crafted to be savored responsibly.